talk about today are students with special needs, and this actually is a lecture that really probably belongs in a 201 class, but I need to give it to you now because I know a lot of you have not been introduced to special needs, and to be able to talk about assistive technologies and using those with students with special needs, you have to have a basic understanding about what it means to have a special need. So there are lots of different types of special needs, and there's you've probably heard about different laws that are out there. One is the American with Disabilities Act, and that's the one that says that individuals in the community who are disabled should have rights to be able to do things that other people can't. And if that means that you have to put in a ramp, then you have to put in a ramp. And if it means that you put in curb cuts around the roads, then you have to put in curb cuts around the roads. So that is a federal law, and know that we are unique in the United States that we do have laws like that. There are many, many countries that do not have those types of that type of appreciation for individuals with handicapping conditions. The next is the Vocational Rehabilitation Act, and this one talks more specifically about what you need to require or what you need to make accessible if there's somebody in your work environment who has a disability. So if I have somebody who is hearing impaired who is working for me and I'm the boss, the employer, then I need to make sure that the telephone that they have has the TTY or whatever it is called. I need to make sure that I supply that for that individual. So that's what you hear about. With the ADA, we don't really think much in terms of education. With the vocational rehabilitation, there are two sections of that law that will appeal to you as a teacher. One is Section 504, and what that section says is that if there is an individual who has a disability that doesn't fall under the other categories that you would receive special education services for, then that child still is going to get services in a school. Now, that's why this big area over here is IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. This is what is covered in special education. When we think of that in the IEP and all the stuff that you think about in special ed, this is what we're thinking about. There are some kids, though, that don't have this but still have special needs. So, for instance, a student who has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder does not fall into this category unless his or her learning is affected by that. A child who has obsessive compulsive disorder that is not affecting his or her learning but is still affecting him or her in other ways, like socially on the playground, is still covered through Section 504. So those children that kind of fall through the cracks here also get picked up here. The other one, Section 508, is about technologies. And what's that saying? That if I'm going to make something available to one person in the United States in a work environment or, in fact, in a school environment, I need to also make that available to individuals who have disabilities. So, for instance, if I'm going to say we're going to be using blog technology in our class, or we're going to be going online and using the internet in our class, but you have a student who does not have use of his or her hands, that is going to say that you need to make sure that you have the technologies so that he or she can do that, or you're going to use websites that are going to, well, you're going to choose websites that are going to allow those technologies to work. So that makes sure that the technologies that you're using are going to work for that individual. So that takes us then to the big law, and these, mostly you don't have to worry too much about these, but you do have to worry about IDEA. So the Individuals with Disability Education Act guarantees rights for all individuals who have disabilities to receive a free and appropriate public education, and we'll come back to that in a minute. And there are three broad categories of disability types that it covers. The first one that we'll talk about is the physical, then we'll talk about cognitive and emotional. What you'll notice, though, is I put these as three interlocking Venn diagrams, or, you know, circles, because you can have more than one disability, or you can have all of them. You can have just one, you can have two, or all three. Physical disabilities tend to be the individual who has some type of paralysis and or in a wheelchair. It could be a student who a speech impediment actually could come under a physical disability. A student who maybe has a student who is visually impaired or is blind or hearing impaired or who is deaf, and those are two different things. You can be Deaf means that you can't hear at all. Hearing impaired means that you have some hearing, but it's not good enough to be able to maybe function normally in society without some type of assistance. An example of a student that I had in my class who was physically disabled was a boy who had, he was auditorily impaired, so hearing impaired. And so when he came into class, I had to wear something similar to this. And he had a note taker, and he had hearing aids that could pick up the FM transceiver that I wore. So he could hear more loudly what I was saying, and he could visually see what I was doing, and he didn't have to take notes. His note taker would take notes. I have a student right now in one of my classes in the same situation. So again, I wear some type of a transmitter. And what she does, though, is instead, because the technology's moved since 1996 when I had that last student, is she has a computer sitting in front of her using internet access and Skype technology. That's a telephone-based or an internet-based telephone system. She is able to get real-time communication. Whatever's happening in the class that's being picked up by this little mic, her transcriber, who is in Utah or Arizona, is typing it in. And there's maybe a 1 second delay. And that's how quickly it happens. So she is seeing exactly what's going on. And then she also had a note taker who would take notes for her so that she didn't have to take her eyes off of that screen. So that would be an example of a physical disability and a technology that you might see using to help that student. Instead, I'm going to go down to emotional next. And the emotional disabilities tend to either be very severe, and those students you probably won't see them because they tend to be very violent or incapable of dealing in social situations, or very minor, in which case they tend not to get services. I have a great little poem. It's like Row 3, Seat 7 from Cottonwood Press. And it's about this little girl, and she says, you know, Johnny got moved because he was talking, and, you know, Mark carried a knife, and so he got in trouble, and all these little things are happening in the class. And then she says, but the teacher doesn't know who I am. And yet she talks about her life and how things are so difficult at home. And she's clearly very, very depressed, clinically depressed. And the issue is, we'll often have students who sit in our classrooms who don't cause us problems. So we tend not to say anything. We don't worry about it. We don't call their parents. But the reality of it is, they're just so depressed. And that type of a child does need assistance. And that's the type of child that you're going to refer to your counselor. And then your counselor is probably going to refer to your school psychologist, who needs to go through the process to get assistance. Or a child who has, what we're looking at for my son, is obsessive compulsive disorder, where he does his stuff really fast, but he's bright enough that his grades aren't being negatively affected by it. He's doing really well. And so he doesn't really qualify because he's doing well in his grades, so what's going to happen? Well, that's when we bring in Section 504 and get him help there. As soon, though, as his grades are affected because of whatever it is he has, Asperger's or OCD, then he's going to get special education services. What might happen in that case is you have that child who has this emotional handicap, and then they might say, maybe if that child can do better if he or she has some toy with them. Or maybe think of the service animals. Maybe a service animal, then maybe that's something that could happen in the school. Maybe not. Maybe if that child would do better if he or she was removed during certain high stress times, then that will work for that child. Sometimes what will happen is the children will be very severely emotionally handicapped, in which case they're usually removed from the regular ed situation because of the severities of their behaviors. Examples of individuals that I've worked with when I was teaching special ed in Clark County School District. One girl was a big girl. It was fifth grade, and she was tall. She looked like a seventh grader. And she would get so angry, she'd just pick up a chair and throw it across the room. Now, I could deal with that sometimes in a resource room where I had 12 students, but I couldn't expect you to do that in your fifth grade classroom with, you know, 35 kids. And so she was placed in my resource room class for that issue. Other things that she would do is before and after school, she'd go and lay down in the middle of the street, like right in front of the cars. And so these are some serious behaviors. Another student that I had, it was really sad. She she had been with her living with her mother in a trailer, and her mother earned her money in her trailer the way some Las Vegas women do, and her daughter was privy to all of the things that were going on and how much involvement she had with that. I don't know, but she certainly knew exactly what was going on and saw things. And she was in fourth grade, and this girl had no ability to know what was right and what wasn't right, especially in dealing with boys. And so we had to be so careful with her out on the playground, because she'd go up to, you know, a third grade boy and say something that you wouldn't want them saying in high school to each other. We had to really work closely with her to try and keep the other kids kind of safe from that and try and teach her some social behaviors that were appropriate. So I can't think too much of some technologies that might fit any specific types of emotional handicaps, because they're so specialized. Maybe what it is giving them an iPod where they can journal, or, you know, giving them a blog space where they can write, where it can be kept private, or letting them contact you outside of class, having a threaded discussion space where they can talk about things if they can't say it in class. So those are very often very sad cases of some very very sick children, and fortunately we're in a situation now where mental health is starting to get attention in the medical field, and hopefully we'll be able to come up with some solutions for working with some of those children so that they don't have to live that way. Then the last one, the reason I kept this till last because it's huge, is cognitive. And when we tend to think of cognitive, that means the mind. Cognitive disabilities, we tend to think of people who are low on the IQ scale. And I'm sure that you've seen this before, but the IQ scale is a bell curve, with the average person being right here with 100 IQ. And then what it is 66 2/3% of the people fall within this section. And then there are those people who fall outside of that section. And we call these areas standard deviations. So this would be 115, and this would be 130, this would be 85, and this would be 70. So in your classroom, you're going to have every one of the students that falls from 70 on up. The students who are above 130 are going to be tested, and if found above 130, they're going to have the opportunity to also attend GATE in a pull-out program. Unless you're in a different district or a very specialized district, they'll probably still be mainstreamed in your classroom for most of the time. The students who have, one type of student who has a cognitive impairment are those individuals who have been tested to have below a 70 IQ. The example that you all recognize is a student with Down syndrome. Though they can be high functioning, usually they're below 70 IQs, probably more like 30 to 60, somewhere in there. And those individuals can learn how to work and be productive members of society. Often what will happen is they'll be placed in a specialized school. We have one here called Helen J. Stewart. It's a fabulous school, and they'll be taught things like how to use public transportation systems. And as a teacher, that's what you do, is you teach them to use the bus, because you know that probably they won't be able to pass a driver's test, and they probably won't be able to afford a car. You teach them how to do a job. So maybe during high school, all you do is you work at a pizza place every day, and you have your teacher there making sure you're doing it right. And what ends up happening is, after that experience, that person can maybe earn enough money to live in his or her own apartment, can maybe learn how to go shopping and buy clothes, can learn how to take public transportation, and then in that way they can be independent individuals who can live lives as relatively normal adults. But without that education, they certainly aren't going to have the ability or seldom will have that ability to be completely integrated into society in that way. So those are the students that we tend to think about with cognitive disabilities. What happens often is you'll have students who fall right here, like between 70 and 80 IQs, and in your classrooms, they're not going to seem particularly bright. They're going to have a lot of troubles, and they will probably have quite a few behavior problems because they don't understand a lot of what's going on. They are not going to receive services because they don't meet the legal criteria to get that extra help. So it's your responsibility to make sure that that child gets everything he or she needs to be able to participate fully in the class. So maybe they'll get lower grades in your class, but that doesn't mean that you're always saying, you know, you're the bad kid who can't do it. You're always trying to help them to get to be the best student that they can be as well.
They fall under the section 5
No, they won't. Because this is normal. This is 66.2% of the population. So they will not. But sometimes, you know, now we don't use the term as much. We used to use the term crack kids because they'd fall through the cracks. But that's, we don't use the term crack kids anymore because crack kids tends to mean something else. But they're kids who need help, but they will sometimes fall through that, you know, I've got a 71 IQ. Well, sorry, you don't get services. Okay. Now, the biggest population that you're going to have in your class, and that's why I saved it till last, is going to fall into cognitive disabilities. And that's a student with a learning disability or LD. And you will have these students in your classroom. You're almost guaranteed. Learning disability means that the student has the ability to do one thing and is doing something else. Usually it's what we call, when you take an IQ test, there's two parts of it. There's the verbal and the performance. Verbal might be asking you questions, you know, what's the capital of France? And a performance might be giving you a puzzle and asking you to put it together. What tends to happen in most of these cases is students will take the test and maybe get a 120 IQ for the performance and maybe an 85 for the verbal. And that distinction, that separation, is what we defined as a learning disability, when there's a difference. And what we know from lots of research in special education over the last 30 years is that there's a reason for that difference. And when we define it legally, when you get services through IDEA for learning disability, that means you have two standard deviations difference between your ability to perform and your actual performance. So it's two standard deviations. I said one is 15. That means you have to be at least 30 points below on your IQ score, below your ability is your performance. Okay. So this is a pretty significant difference. What does that mean, though? Does anybody know what that means? It means you're dealing with a very bright kid. A very bright kid who looks like he's not bright or she's not bright. And usually they're boys, but that, you know, it's like a 60-30 split or something. What'll happen is you'll have a kid who has 130 IQ, so it's just about a gate kid, gifted and talented, but he is performing at 100. He's doing average. And so what do you do as a teacher? You give him average work because he's doing average work. But that poor kid could be performing here. What we find is that the reason that they have this disability can be for lots of different things. Sometimes it's because a visual perceptual problem. When they look at something, they can't really see it the same way other kids do. There's dyslexia, which maybe you've heard of, when people see things backwards. That is a very, very uncommon disability, by the way. We tend to think everybody has it. That's not true. Dysgraphia, maybe they can't write very well. You know, their hand-eye coordination just doesn't match up. It just doesn't go well together. That doesn't mean that their brain can't tell everything that they want to write down. That means they just can't get it out in writing. If you have a student who has an auditory perceptual problem, that means they don't hear it right. If I let that kid read what I'm talking about, or I let them see pictures of what I'm talking about, they've got it. And they've probably got it better than most of the other kids in the class. But as soon as I use my voice to explain what's going on, that kid is not going to have as much success. And so what we tend to recommend is trying your classes to use lots of different learning styles appealing to lots of different modalities. Your auditory, your visual, your kinesthetic, your tactile. You want to touch on everything that you can. But what you need to know in terms of technology is, if I'm going to ask a kid to do something that isn't in their area of strength, whether they're disability or not, I need to make sure that there's an opportunity for them to learn in their ability of strength. So if I have a student who maybe has a reading disability, and I am reading I'm having them read books for homework, then that kid's never going to be successful. He or she's never going to get the point. So what am I going to do? Maybe let them listen to an audiobook. Okay? So there are lots of technologies that can help these students. For instance, I have a student in one of my evening classes who has a learning disability. And she can't write to save her life. You know, she just can't pass anything where she has to write it. So on her assignment, what I had her do is she uses Microsoft Word. And within Word, there's in the notebook layout, you can create audio. So what she'll do is she'll put in the title of the section, and then she'll audio record what she wants to say. And her stuff is phenomenal when she audio records it. But when it's written, she's getting really low grades. And so that's one way that she's able to use the technology to compensate. Okay, so what are students, what rights do they have? First, every child in the United States between ages 5 and 18, and if you have a disability between birth and 21, has the right to a free and appropriate public education. That means you don't have to pay for it. You're going to get not only the education itself, but the ability, the right to have whatever you need so that you can learn to the same rate as your peers. That means if the child in your classroom needs a computer or needs a transcriptionist to actually learn at the same rate as his or her peers, then that's what that child is going to get. The next thing is the least restrictive environment. We'll talk about this in just a minute, but what it means is that child has the right to learn in the one place where he or she is most connected or spends most of his or her time with similar peers or with regular peers or normal peers, mainstream. So as much as a child can be in your classroom, because you're going to be regular elementary teachers, regular ed, they have the right to be there. So if you have a child who has a disability in your class, you do not have the right to have them leave your class unless their disability is such that they cannot perform in your class. And often what will happen is they will be put in your class so that they'll have some social skills. So for instance, when I was teaching Resource Room, I had students who were mentally challenged severe, so the students who had very low IQs, they would come into my class so that they could be with students in the Resource Room, so they had some students who were more like age-appropriate peers that they could learn from. Students in my class, my Resource Room class, who were mostly learning disabled, would then be mainstreamed into your regular ed classes so that they would have that opportunity to be with peers that are of normal intelligence without disabilities as well. Next is every child who has qualifies for special education receives an individualized education plan. Every student in your class will not have one of these IEPs. You will be teaching to all of the students in your class, but that one student who qualifies for special education is going to have a special plan. Now, you may or may not see that plan, but you will definitely see, and if you don't, you better ask for it, is what's called the teacher accommodations part of it. And what that is Karen has a student in her class with a mental disability, and what it says is it's one piece of paper that says these are the things that Karen must allow that child to do or must work with this child. Sometimes what you'll see for a student with learning disabilities, it'll be student only receives half of the number of spelling words per week or only has to do half of the math problems. Okay, so those will be the types of accommodations. For a child with an emotional handicap, it might be student has the right to leave the classroom and go to the Resource Room or go to a specialized classroom. Okay, so these are the delivery models. Inclusion is you. That is fully included, where every kid in our district, we'd like them all to be. Cooperative consultative model, and I've served in this model, you have a teacher whose job it is to talk with you, the regular ed teacher, to make sure that child who has a disability in your class is getting services in the way he or she needs. So what will often happen is I'll then go into Karen's room, and she's got Maria, and I'm Maria's caseworker. She's on my caseload. And she and I will say, she'll say, Maria's not doing well in these parts. And then I'll say, well, you know what, let me go and look at her assignment. And then I'll say, for Maria, let's cancel these three problems, and I think she'll do okay. Or let me pull her into the Resource Room for a little bit, and I'll help her out, and then I'll bring her back. Or I'll work with her in your classroom. So that that cooperative consultative teacher that comes in, their job is to assist you so you can assist that student. But also, when I'm in that classroom in the role of cooperative consultative teacher, I'm to work with all of the students, but my focus is really on those two or three or four students with special needs who fall into to my caseload. The next level is Resource Room. This is a pull-out model. Very few students, hardly any, are in the Resource Room all the time. What that means is if you have a child who has a disability, let's say a reading disability, that boy or girl will be pulled out of your classroom during your class reading time so he or she can do reading in that classroom as well. What'll happen is you'll have students in your class Like I had a boy who could perform well in just about everything but reading. And in reading, he was fourth grade, I think. He would do, he couldn't read words like I, me, the. Now in fourth grade, that's just unheard of for your regular fourth grade student. So he would be pulled out of the classroom during the reading time, so because he wasn't getting anything out of it when they're reading, you know, a textbook, he'd be pulled out so that I could help him with his reading and we could look at it differently. Specialized classrooms are when a resource is pullout, specialized where you go for all the time. So a student with a severe learning disability, meaning that they really can't learn anything in the regular ed classroom because there's too much of a differentiation between their performance and their ability level because of their disability, then they'll be put in a specialized classroom. This is a lot of the students I said with severe emotional handicaps. This is where they'll end up, mainly because of their safety and the safety of other students. And literally, if you go to, I think it was Miley, I'm not sure what the school is. We have one here in Las Vegas. If you go to those schools, and I've taught as a sub in one of those schools, they will have a room on the side that's basically a white rubberized room, and sometimes the students will have to go in there and calm down. It's sad, but it's for their safety and for the safety of the other children as well. And the final one is specialized schools. And an example of a specialized school is variety school. And that's, remember how I said some students have lots of disabilities? Variety school is for individuals who have multiple disabilities. So maybe they have cerebral palsy and they're a very low IQ. So many of the students at this school are really not able to be functioning members of society, even as adults. You might be teaching them toileting at that school. You might be teaching them to eat with a spoon. Okay, so very, very usually physically, severely physically disabled as well as mentally disabled. Okay, so what does this mean for regular ed? The bottom line is you will have students in your classroom who have disabilities. You will need to service those students, and you will have assistance available to you in the form of either a cooperative consultative or a resource room teacher on your campus. But they're not going to tell you everything. When that child is in your classroom and you see that they're struggling and it's related to their disability, you need to be proactive in finding ways that you can assist that child to become more successful. And there are lots and lots of technologies out there that will allow that to happen. So some things that will allow it to happen is on the computer, we've got built-in universal access. Some computers will allow you to do lots of different things on the computer, and I'll show you what those are in a minute. Also, use alternative methodologies. If using a lecture method isn't going to work for that kid, then try something else. And then the other is take advantage of what's on the web. And one of the things that I'm going to show you on the web in just a second is that there are places that you can go to make sure that the website is in fact accessible. Just because you have a student who is visually impaired in your class and has a text reader that he or she can use doesn't mean that the web page they're looking at can read it. Okay? So with that, I'm going to show you a few things online.